Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be traveling through this interview today to another part of the country and to a time when people were making history, Native Americans were making history in the area of sports. So we're going to be talking with Tom Benji, and we're going to be talking about his fascinating book on historical figures of the Native American culture, Doctors, Lawyers, Indian Chiefs. Tom, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Donna. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing fabulously. When I first interviewed you, it was a few years back, you had written a fabulous book called The Life of Lone Star Diet. I was so impressed with that, and it was just such a joy to talk about a man I had no knowledge of, and to find out his contributions and what he accomplished. But you decided to go even further. You decided you were going to really invest your time, your effort, and your energy in researching a number of phenomenal sports figures that came out of one school, and they were Native Americans. Tom, tell my audience how you got enthralled with this particular subject matter, because you've put over 10 years of research into this book, Doctors, Lawyers, Indian Chiefs.
Well, it's my wife's fault.
Oh, here we go. Come on. You're going to blame your wife?
Yeah, see, several years ago, we went to a talk at the Cumberland County Historical Society, which is the local historical society here in Carlisle, and there was a talk about the Carlisle Indian School. And Ann and I were both interested in learning more about it. We didn't know much. And during the middle of the talk, the woman making the presentation listed several of the people who had been associated with the Indian School and what they did later on. And she got to Lone Star Dietz and mentioned that he went from Carlisle in 1915 to Washington State, there in Pullman, where he was the head coach of the football team, of the college football team. He took a previously losing team to an undefeated season, and for his efforts was given the opportunity to defend the honor of the West in a New Year's Day game played in Pasadena, California. The folks there in Pasadena had this little floral parade on New Year's morning, and they're looking for another activity to round out the day. And they had been having chariot races, but they had become fixed and dangerous. So football was becoming the rage, so they decided to try a football game. To make a long story short, his team won that football game, and which is, as we know, the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl. Well, my wife was sitting next to me, and she is a Michigander from a long line of Michiganders, and got very indignant. She said, "Oh, no, Michigan won the first Rose Bowl in 1902. So we go home. I do a little research and quickly found the answer to which was the first Rose Bowl question is, it depends on what you mean by the first Rose Bowl. But I found a little information about Dietz, and he was just a fascinating guy. And I started, no one had written a book about him, and and half of what I found on him was incorrect. But as I did the research, the truth was more interesting than the made-up stuff. And after doing that book, or while doing that book, I, of course, stumbled across many of these other characters who were quite interesting themselves.
Well, it took you on a journey. I'm sure you did not have a clue what that was going to bring you into so much unique information, because when we go back into this area of time, the Native Americans have been forced onto reservations. The schools that were provided were less than desirable. What made Carlisle such a unique school? I know Pop Warner was part of it, but give us a little bit of history on that school.
Okay. Richard Henry Pratt was a cavalry lieutenant. He fought in the Civil War, and then after the Civil War, he was out in the West fighting in the Indian Wars, leading a troop of Buffalo soldiers. And in the mid-1870s, he was tasked with taking some prisoners from the Southwest to Fort Marion, Florida, basically St. Augustine, for a 3-year incarceration. It wasn't long into these prisoners' incarceration that he decided to switch things around. He got rid of the army guards and had some of the inmates become trustees and guard themselves.
Oh, that's a unique approach.
Right. He also found that they were educable, that they were learning English while they were there at St. Augustine. The prisoners would draw and sell their drawings to local people and would teach. They'd make bows and arrows and sell them and teach local ladies how to shoot bows and arrows. While at St. Augustine, these Quaker ladies from Philadelphia came down and made the acquaintance of Pratt. Oh, Pratt's father was also a minister. He was a Presbyterian. His father would have been a Presbyterian minister. Well, Pratt was really a reformer. He was living at a time when the belief the only good Indian is a dead Indian was not uncommon. Many people viewed them as savages, uneducable, and just they ought to be eradicated.
Mm-hmm.
Pratt didn't see it that way. He was a reformer. He thought that they should have the opportunity to go to school and should have all the opportunities that anyone else in society had, and he felt they were up to it. In 1878, he lobbied the government to let him start educating these inmates when their incarceration was over. So for 1 year, he took several of them from Florida up to Hampton Institute, which in Hampton, Virginia. Today, it's known as Hampton University. It was a school, is a school that was originally set up to educate the freed slaves. Pratt felt that the system in place there wasn't what the Indians needed. The students there were kind of segregated from mainstream society. Pratt felt that the Indian students needed to be out into the mainstream society as much as possible so they could learn and, you know, the habits would rub off, that sort of thing. So he lobbied Congress again, and they gave him Carlisle Barracks to use. Carlisle Barracks is our second oldest army facility. It was built during the French and Indian War. And it has a building on it that was built by the Hessian troops that were taken prisoner by George Washington at the Battle of Trenton. But by 1879, it was in disuse. So the army said, okay, he can have it. So Congress gave him that base to use to start an Indian school.
Now, he had an attitude. He wanted to kill the Indian but save the man.
Yes.
Which I thought was absolutely amazing. And he did that in part, to a degree, and didn't do it wholly, but in part, because he would keep them away from the tribes, from the families, and he said he believed, just as you were saying, in immersing the Indians within the white man's civilization, and you want to hold them under so that they are thoroughly soaked with the indoctrination. Now, this is amazing to me, what you've been able to put together. You have people in here from the Sioux, Chippewa, Sac and Fox, Cheyenne, Flathead, Cherokee, and Oneida, that all of these different tribes, they ended up being such the individuals ended up being such phenomenal contributors to the game of football under Pop Warner. And one of them that you talked about at length, and it's Jim Thorpe, and just about anybody that's familiar with the game, with the Olympics, they know about Jim Thorpe. Go into the story of Jim, because in a way that was a tragedy, and just recently, I think just in the past few years, he was acknowledged as, you know, not deserving the treatment that he got. But let's go into a little bit of Jim Thorpe's history.
Okay, Jim Thorpe grew up in Oklahoma. He had a twin brother who died when they're, I think, about 8 years old. In my opinion, Jim Thorpe's life, if it had a theme, it was loss. He lost his twin brother, and he felt that the rest of his life. And then when he was fairly young, he lost his mother. While he was at Carlisle, he lost his father. When he was a young married man, he lost his first child in the influenza epidemic. And prior to that, he lost his Olympic medal. I guess they simply stated, Jim Thorpe was the probably greatest all-around athlete that's ever been produced. Produced is probably not the right word, because his talent was innate.
Yes, that's what Pop Warner said. He hadn't seen anybody like him. He could run. He and a friend at school, the running they would do, and it was just like walking down to the corner drugstore. Well, I guess we ran about 50 miles. Yeah, isn't that nice? Not even, I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, well, as a boy, Jim and his brother would run across their allotment there in Oklahoma, fishing and hunting, and he loved that life. You know, out on the plains and the hills and the woods, hunting and fishing and running. That's what he most enjoyed. In fact, during the winters and the off season, he would often go out to Oklahoma to do that. And I think that early, you know, that life helped prepare him as an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
He got a tremendous amount of exercise. He was also, his appetite was quite something, too. As a result of all that exercise, he ate a lot. But he burned it up because he did so much,
mm-hmm.
running, jumping, you name it.
Now, in 1982, I just found the information, the International Olympic Committee reinstated Thorpe's medals and records because what they had done to him was appalling. But that's something that in your book you go into detail. And again, you've got all of these wonderful people, but you talk about the politics. And that is something that I was amazed to find out about, the political structure, the activity, the scandal regarding Pop Warner. And we're talking about, you know, the late 1800s, the 1900s. Jim Thorpe, he passed away, I believe, in 1953?
Yes.
So when he passed away, that was the death of a legend that still lives on in the games. But you had this character, Pop Warner, who was just a phenomenal coach because he knew how to evaluate each and every one of the young men that he had in his care. And he would work with each and every one individually to get the results. But he was one of these characters who did a little bit of unethical stuff and eventually was caught. However, he produced teams from Carlisle School that played with the Big Four. Name the Big Four. Yale, Harvard, and what are the other two?
Princeton and Penn.
They played all of them.
That's right. The Indians played, other than their early season warm-up games, they played on the road in the big cities in the country against the best, the toughest opposition that they could find. And in those days, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, and Penn were the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things have changed a little bit. Here's kind of a change of pace. In 1904, when Warner wasn't there, and that has nothing to do with it, the Indians were invited to come to the St. Louis World's Fair to play a game against Haskell Institute, another Indian school, on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. They had already scheduled a Thanksgiving Day game with Ohio State. So that game being 2 days before the big game with Haskell there at the World's Fair, that game was set up because President Roosevelt, that'd be Teddy Roosevelt, was visiting the fair then. So it was a big deal. Well, the team decided we can't, you know, they couldn't afford to play their first string against Ohio State and risk injury prior to that big game on Saturday. So they played Ohio State with their second string and annihilated them. They beat Ohio State pretty badly with their second string. Now, Ohio State fans were unhappy because they wanted to see Carlisle Stars. But that shows how the powers in football changed. You know, today Ohio State's one of the biggest powers.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of the different individuals that you have in your book, you've got 13 individuals, but you have Gus Welch, you have brothers in here, you have information about their captains. You go into so much detail that it is amazing what these Native Americans accomplished, and they did go on to lead very successful, productive lives. But in your book, they are getting some of the recognition that they deserve because of what they did. And more than that, you tell their personal stories, which I think makes for very interesting reading. I was fascinated to find out that what we take for granted today about the tradition, the Thanksgiving, and the postseason games, Carlisle started all of this. And who would have thought that? I would never have imagined that. You know, you don't often think to look at where something originated from, but this was quite a significant influence. And look at where we are today with it. People would feel funny if there weren't games going on.
Yeah, what would New Year's Day be like?
My goodness gracious. We would just absolutely be lost. Who is your favorite personality that you researched besides Lone Star Diaz and Jim Thorpe?
That's hard. It's really hard to say. I like Frank Caillou because he was quite a character. William Gardner was very interesting. He's the fellow that became one of Elliot Ness's untouchables.
Oh, tell us about him. If we hear Elliot Ness, and almost everybody listening knows about Elliot Ness, the great crime fighter in the Untouchables. I mean, there's been more than one movie made about them. Tell us about him. How did he get involved with Elliot Ness?
Well, Elliot Ness was recruiting from the Justice Department, it was at the time, agents to come and work with his operation, and Ness was aiming at Al Capone, and he was breaking up his breweries. He was figuring the best way to put Al Capone out of business was to hurt him in the pocketbook, stop his cash flow, and he was doing that by breaking up breweries. When Elliot Ness recruited Gardner, he was initially planning on using him as an undercover agent. But when he saw him in person, here Gardner was he was Chippewa, and he was over 6 feet tall, and an Indian, obviously an Indian, so there was no way that Elliot Ness could, use him as an undercover agent. He was just too visible. So his job was climbing ladders and coming in on roofs and things as they would burst into a brewery and break up the brewery or the still.
Well, now here he is, and you've got photos throughout this book, and I just looked up Gardner's photo. He was quite a nice-looking man, and he went on to finish the Dickinson School of Law. And here he is, you know, just going through all kinds of stuff. One, because he is so tall, which dispels any illusions that people might think that, you know, a lot of the Indians were real short people. They weren't. There were many of them that were very tall. They're just like, you know, all other cultures. And you just have so much good information. You also have a lot of art that is related to that time frame with the Native Americans. Now, you have some information also that Carlisle, it was over a quarter of a century before Indians were granted citizenship and the right to vote, three-quarters of a century before the 1965 Civil Rights Bill, and almost a century before affirmative action, that these Native Americans, these teams at Carlisle, were competing with the best in the country. I mean, this is amazing. You don't hear of this in history class in high school.
No, that's one of the reasons I felt the need to write it. These people's stories deserve to be told and hadn't been told and are in jeopardy of being lost. Their grandchildren are my age now, and I was at the Social Security office today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there are very few people left that knew them. So I felt that the time is now to get their stories recorded and told for fear they get lost.
Well, I think it's fabulous. Now, you talk about John Steckbeck's book that was done in 1951, and his title of his book was Fabulous Redmen, the Carlisle Indians, and Their Famous Football Teams. And in that book, he did a year-by-year history of the Indians and what they did, all kinds of stats. And you said that there are so many of them that have been mentioned in the College Football Hall of Fame, and All-American mention, and Pop Warner had a lot to do with that.
Well, Warner was probably the most innovative coach in football there ever was. He invented so many things that are commonplace today and that were not thought of before him. One of the things was his offense that was called, initially it was referred to as the Carlisle formation. Then it was called the single wing, and the double wing evolved out of that. But those formations changed the way football was played and created the modern game. It opened it up. Prior to 1906, the rules were such that most teams played what they called mass formation. A whole glob of big, beefy guys pushing together and just pushing the ball forward. There was some rule changes made in 1906, and to respond to those rule changes, Warner designed a whole new system, and he designed it around the Indians because they were typically lighter weight but quicker than their opponents. So where the opponents were using muscle and beef, Warner had the Indians using speed and deception.
Fascinating. And also what you show in the book, which I think is awesome, is a lot of the political cartooning that went on at the time and how there were these preconceived attitudes. Now, when you think of what you've just shared with us today, when you think of first Pratt and his attitude and him having been associated with the Civil War, and then he is at this school, and then there's this evolution with sports. You have all of this history that you've been able to put together in such an interesting format. I would think anybody, if they were having a kid that was having a reading problem and they love sports, what a way to engage kids in reading to be able to share with them these stories. And if someone knows of Native Americans that maybe don't have an idea about their cultural history, what a great thing to share. I mean, your 10 years of commitment definitely have brought forth a tremendous amount of information about Native Americans who have, to a degree, received some recognition, but because of the time frame, people don't realize that what we're doing today with football and what has happened with football, the evolution, is because of these individuals that were at this Indian school.
And it even goes beyond that. Those players, many of them played in the early professional football game, which was in its infancy at the time, and played major roles in its development. One of the early pro teams that was strong was a team named Canton, Ohio. It had a nearby rival, Massillon. In 1915, William Gardner was playing end for Canton, and the coach, or the manager, Jack Cusack, saw that Massillon was loading up with former All-Americans for their big game. At the end of the season, Canton and Massillon played a pair of games against each other, one at each location. And Massillon, for instance, one of the players that they recruited was Newt Rockne. He played for them. And he played opposite Bill Gardner. But Jack Cusack saw that he needed to beef up his team. So he dispatched Gardner to Bloomington, Indiana, to recruit Jim Thorpe, because Jim Thorpe was a backfield coach for the Indiana University that year. Cusack did something that the other team owners and managers thought was insane. He offered Jim Thorpe $250 a game to play for Canton. Prior to that, a player had been paid that kind of money as a ringer for an odd game here or there, but nobody had ever been paid that kind of money on a continuing basis.
Now, $250 may not sound like a lot to our audience today, but that was, what, equivalent to $25,000 today?
I don't know in today's numbers, but at that time, it was close to half a year's salary for most people.
Mm-hmm.
it was a lot of money.
That was a lot of money. That was a lot of money in those days. And to be paid that for each game? That's incredible. Well, you know, Tom, we're just about out of time, but I want to say to those of you listening, whether or not you're involved in football, whether or not you're a sports person, I can tell you, and I'm not a sports person per se, but Doctors, Lawyers, Indian Chiefs by Tom Benji is really a fascinating historical aspect that you would never even know about unless you had the opportunity to read about it. The foreword in this book is done by Bernie Kish. Dr. Bernie Kish. He's an executive director for the College Football Hall of Fame. And this is not just about Jim Thorpe and Pop Warner, who are very, very popular names, well-known historically in the football arena and in the Olympics, but this is about the Carlisle Indian School football teams. These are people that have become immortals. They talk about socialites. You got stuff in here about bootleggers. You got stuff about students, moguls, prejudice, the government. You've got rum in here. You have got corruption. You've got all kinds of stuff. So it's a good read, believe me. Tom, quick like a bunny. I know we're almost out of time. What's your website that people can go to?
www.tuxedo-press.com.
tuxedo-press.com. Tom, it is a delight to have you as a guest. Thank you so much. And I hope that this gets into every coach's hands and every teacher that ever wants to inspire others about the games, because this is really good reading.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. We're going to be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. All I need from you is your first name or initial. Then after that, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me about anything you like. So here are the telephone numbers. You can call in at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. And so any of those lines, call in on them. And again, all I need is your first name or initial. Of course, I like to know where you're calling from too. So that I'll get from you as well. And then I'll give you what I perceive. Now, quick like a bunny, I want to mention this Saturday I am going to be doing an appearance at the Boeing Parapsychology Expo. This is an all-day event at Kent Commons. Now, you can get all of the details regarding this. You can go to my website, check out my newsletter, or just go to the Boeing Parapsychology Fair. Just type that in on Google and you've got it. And then they'll give you directions, they'll tell you everything about what's happening, who's speaking, so on and so forth. But I'm going to be there, and I'm going to be doing many consultations, and I'm also going to have a lot of books that I'm going to be offering up for sale. So just know you're going to have that opportunity. Come by, say hello. If you're in the state of Washington, it's in Kent, and it is a wonderful thing to do this coming Saturday. Also, I am going to be on the road traveling. This is a microphone that is going to be moving around the country for the next few weeks. Yes, I'm going to be in Tampa, Florida. In fact, I'm going to be attending the retreat that Teresa Tapp is going to be putting on. So we're going to be right there on site, and we'll be talking with some of the people that are participating in this event. There will be a remote show from there, and we'll be giving you all of the true scoops on what's happening and how you can keep physically fit and not have to agonize. Hours in a gym. Believe me, it works. It's just wonderful. And then after that, I'm going to be on my way to San Francisco. and this is going to be October. Now, I said Tampa, I'm going to be there on the 2nd. Then I'm going to be in San Francisco at the Wisdom Festival. This is a fabulous event. It's an annual event, and we invite you to come out. If you live in the San Francisco area or close by, come on out. It's going to be held the weekend of the 17th, 18th, and 19th. In fact, we're going to be having some speakers that will be on the air with us coming up in October prior to the event, and I think you're going to find them quite interesting. So we've got all of this lined up and ready to go, and it's just a lot of fun. Now, this is being held at Fort Mason. People coming in from all over the country to participate, products and services from around the world. So I invite you to go to wisdomfestival.com, find out about this event that can introduce you perhaps to some new thoughts, new ideas, new concepts of all kinds, plus, again, products and services that would be available to you. Stop by my booth, say hello, and I, again, will be doing many consultations there. There's just a lot going on with that program, and I'm just so delighted to be a part of it. So I invite you to, again, come by and say hello. Give me a call today if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, or 530-876-3222. I received a piece of material from Bob, and I thought I would share it because I really liked it. You know, in the first part of the show, we were talking about a school, Carlisle. And some of you would say, Donna, why is this something that's important? Well, I think we have to understand that much of what we experience in today's world has evolved from the actions of the people before us. Lots of times we like to think we're the only ones that have thought up certain ideas, but the reality is that many times people had concepts and ideas, sometimes centuries before we were able to put anything together. Remember, as a human race, we've had a number of dark ages through the periods that really caused us to go backwards in some respects. Some didn't, the majority did. Well, what is the reason for that? What happens here? Why is it, for example, with the Carlisle School that it made such an impact on the students? Well, before we went back on air, I was talking with Tom, my guest, and he said, Donna, something a lot of people don't realize is that the Indians never considered themselves Indians. And I said, that's an interesting statement. At the Carlisle School, though, they became Indians, per se, as we would use the word, since they had to learn English, since they had to be in an environment that was forcing them to adapt on many levels. He said that's when, for the first time, they accepted a description, a cultural description of Indian. He said before the school, they were fighting among each other, tribes, you know, robbing and stealing each other, and they would declare war on each other, and they'd steal the women, and they'd have all kinds of things like this going on. It always fascinates me when people seem to think that Indians just lived in teepees. They didn't have much of anything else happening except producing babies. That's not the case at all. There were rivalries, and there were many tribes that were at war with each other. So when you go and you study the history and you find out what's going on, and then you find out that these people, through education, now granted, it was an educational standard that was set by a society that was foreign to them, but it makes a difference. Well, the reason I'm bringing this up is that I received this material from Bob, and I said, this is good information, and I thought I would share it with you today, just sort of follow through on the theme of the first part of the show. And this is a quote that he had right at the top of what he sent me. In times of change, learners inherit the earth, while the learned find themselves beautifully equipped to deal with a world that no longer exists. And this is done by, this is stated by Eric Hoffer. Now, I want you to think about that for a minute. In times of change, learners inherit the earth, while the learned find themselves beautifully equipped to deal with a world that no longer exists. Now, that's quite a profound statement. And I liked what Bob said. He said, contrary to popular belief, there's no such thing as an educated person. You are either learning or you are not. Wow, that sort of changes the definition, doesn't it? So many times we seem to think an educated person is one that's got a PhD behind their name. Are they really educated? Well, he said, in today's world, you must see that you've got to make choices about what it is you want to experience. He said, when you are willing to learn, then you are going to be able to adapt to the changes that are going on. And I bet you, any of you listening are making statements every once in a while, this world is just changing so quickly, I don't know that I can keep up. Well, every generation has to go through that learning curve, that adaptability curve. Have you ever met someone that refused to change? They said, this is the way it is, this is the way it's going to be for me, I really don't care about anybody else. I have. And that's okay if they want to do it. But the world is a very difficult world for them to live in. They have to create their own little cocoon, because if they're not in that cocoon, they don't feel safe. So you need to equip yourself to deal with a world that doesn't exist as it was known previously. And Bob made a comment. He said, in virtually every country of the world, you can find individuals, thousands of them, walking streets with degrees in their hands, and they can't find work. Why? Because they're afraid. They don't know how to adapt into different environments. Let me give you an example. There was a young man I met down in Los Angeles. I was going down there for a conference, and I had to be transported to a particular location, so they had a shuttle that would take me there from the hotel. Very nice young man, happened to be in his late 30s, and we got to chatting, and I found out that he had a master's degree. Now, here he is in one of the best communities in the country to find work. He couldn't find a job anywhere. I said, this is very interesting. Why are you driving a van? And this was his response. He said, I'm driving this van because, one, it's giving me a job, but two, I'm learning a whole new aspect about business that I didn't know existed. Yep. His attitude made a difference. Now, what he was willing to do was shift into a different environment. And, you know, in our world today, look at what's happening in the news. Look at what you're seeing. The old way of doing things is not working. Politically, socially, there's so many things that just are not working. Some of it is, but some of it isn't. And a lot of people that had a great deal of power maybe in the past, they don't have it anymore. Things are shifting. New components are being birthed. We're in a paradigm shift. That's powerful stuff, a paradigm shift. And that's something that when we can see it and not be afraid, say, I'm going to be curious, you're going to come out ahead. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. Just keep in mind, you want to be that learner. You want to be willing to grow and expand. We're going to come back in just a moment. Give me a buzz at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We're going to be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.DelphiInternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and her website is www.DelphiInternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here's the telephone number, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. Have you ever heard about the term fashion knockoff? Well, I wasn't particularly familiar with it, but it came to my attention. Now, I have heard a lot of times over the years, using different terminology, about those people that copy high fashion items. Well, if you like to find out what fashion knockoffs are, what you need to do, they're items that may look identical to top of the line like Gucci or, you know, Oscar de la Renta or whatever, and can be even in men's clothes. It doesn't make any difference. These are items usually that don't hold up very well. They're made overseas, and the language gap that we have becomes apparent if anything on the label or tags is misspelled. Now, there's a fashion expert, Erica Easley. She said there are some out there that actually confiscate or copy to perfection the tags and everything that are often put inside of top fashion items. But she said they'll be unevenly stitched into the garment in only two corners. We're talking about clothing here. It can happen with purses. It can happen with just about anything. Now, what you want to do, you want to look for the logo, because designer jeans will have logos on the studs, snaps, and buttons, as opposed to plain buttons and snaps. And any unsnipped tails of thread or flimsy zippers are all knockoff giveaways. And she said, top-notch clothes and accessories will have quality materials throughout the item. For instance, a leather purse should have a leather lining, not plastic. So you just need to be aware, just to understand that sometimes cheaper is not better. If you're going to buy quality, make sure you go to those people, those merchants, that are definitely going to be giving you quality and not be copycats. That's the term I was looking for in my head, copycats, because there is a lot of black market in copycat materials, and it's done every single day. There is really a big, big problem with it. However, if you're attentive and you really want something that's quite special and you want a certain brand name, find out how you can discern the real from the fraud. If ever you watch the Antique Roadshow, You'll find that there's so many times they'll talk about things that are replicas. They have been done and they look just so absolutely perfect, but they are forgeries on different levels. Whether it's silver, a painting, a type of clothing, doesn't make any difference. These are things that you need to be aware of. Also, I wanted to share with you that you've got to be very thoughtful about downloading free ringtones to your phone. Somehow or another, you can end up in an automatic subscription service with a monthly fee for more ringtones. I don't know how it happens, but this is something we have to pay attention. So be very, very careful before you get into something you don't want. It is so easy. I had this happen with me on a phone bill. To this day, I just haven't a clue as to how these people got my information, but they did. And I'm still having challenges with them. But it's offshore. There's all kinds of stuff that goes on. So be sure that you stay savvy. You stay aware. You stay alert. And don't assume anything, because it is not the thing to do. And, you know, all kinds of stuff is going to be coming up, especially with the holidays as they evolve. My goodness, scams just seem to abound. People come up with them, and interestingly enough, they seem to be so similar. Every year, the same kind of stuff comes up. So be wise, be attentive, and be aware. You don't have to be scammed. Be educated. Do that for yourself so that you come out ahead. Well, I don't know about you, but sometimes I have a challenge with clutter. And especially, like when I'm doing my radio show, if you were to see where I have all my books, it's almost like floor-to-ceiling books. My husband often jokes that we should move into a house and just convert it into a library. Well, I review hundreds of books a year. I actually review anywhere from 400 to 600 books a year. And it doesn't take long, by my going to the post office and receiving review copies, to find that all of a sudden my little tidy area has just become overwhelmed. So to declutter is really something. To declutter is something else. And one of the tips that I will often give to people that I use myself is that if you can have someone help you with a project, let's say you just wanted to do a room, you just do that room, and you're going to find that maybe you dedicate 3 hours to the job, and you figure out exactly what you want to do. You pull everything out of the closets in that room, maybe drawers, cupboards, whatever you might have, but just pick one spot, and you go through it, but have a friend with you, and have plastic bags or containers that you can put stuff in, and maybe if you wanted to save certain things, you'd have a certain container that might go under the bed or back into the closet, but you'd label it. And then have a bag where you'd have stuff go to the Goodwill. Or maybe if you want to sell some things on eBay or, you know, Craigslist, whatever you want to do, have a container for that. Sometimes people like to use trash cans if you have a whole bunch of trash. And also, if you've got gifts that you would have been saving because you want to give them to people, have this friend or friends. It's fun when you can have a couple people help you. Have a party and maybe wrap the gifts up so they're all ready to go. Put them up in the closet so you know they're for Christmas. Put a name tag on them, whatever it is, and that's already done. So you don't even have to worry about that when the holidays come around. These are just little things that I have found that have worked for me. And I know one of the biggest clutter sections is on my computer, the junk mail. Have you ever noticed how much junk mail you get? And a lot of it, maybe your system doesn't put it automatically into the junk mail pile because you don't even know that you're going to be getting this junk mail. Well, there are some things that you can do. You can deal with junk mail on both levels, both the physical junk mail that you get as well as the email junk mail that you can get. And as you work through the process, of course, with email, it's great because you don't have to work with paper. All you have to do is go in and remove things, hit the spam button, however your system works, and then off they go. Now, when it comes to paper junk mail, something I have done, and what I've come across this suggestion more than once, and that's to have a shredder and have it located close by where you go through your mail. Have a spot where you've got your mail, and then have that shredder and just put it right into the shredder immediately. Oh, and by the way, you know, when you shred your paper, if you want, if there isn't a bunch of plastic in it, if it's just paper, you can go ahead and put it out in your garden because it makes a great compost, just regular paper. Yeah, it really does. I know gardeners that just love to do that. They'll put it out in your yard. But anyway, you can check that out. But this is something where you shred it and then you put it in your recycle bin if you want. That is great. Also, you should understand something that when you use a check rather than a credit card, then banks sometimes will take your name and address and add it to their solicitation list. Good Lord, I get so many of those every day. What about you? Well, those are just a couple of tips to share with you. And just understand there's so many ways. Oh, and also, be sure if you're on email, if you're getting anything, if you're on the Internet, watch for the page when you get information about, gee, do you want us, if you're doing a sweepstake or doing something for a charity, if they see on there, do you want to allow us to share your information, be sure you check the no box. It takes time. Don't be in a hurry. Take time. That way you won't get on other people's list. This is Donna Siebel. It's been a wonderful hour. Thank you for sharing your time with me. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Tomorrow, it's True North with Bill George. We'll be showing you how you can make some choices and changes in your life to live the way you really want to. Come and join me and others in becoming educated. That's what the Donna Siebel Show is all about. Well, talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBSRadio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.